Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we're talking about a movie from 1954, Rear Window, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, ranked number 42 on the original list and number 48 on the 10th anniversary update.
Yeah, first Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Yeah, I think we have four on this list total, and most of them fall within this decade, so it'll be good to have an opportunity to talk about this guy.
Awesome. Well, before we do that, where and when did you watch this movie?
So the first time I think I've seen a number of times. The first time I think was probably in high school, going through the list and kind of learning about. I was like, oh, let me try to watch a lot of the Spielberg movies, a lot of the Scorsese movies, a lot of the Hitchcock movies.
Oh, and you went through it by a director first?
Well, I think I was going through the lists of things and I saw that Hitchcock had a lot of movies on the list and things. So I watched Rear Window. I've watched Vertigo a number of times. I've watched Psycho a number of times. I never got to North by Northwest. That's the one on the list that I haven't seen.
Yeah, I haven't either, I don't think.
But this one I've seen a number of times. It was always one of my more favorite ones. I think Psycho is probably still my favorite of all of his movies, but Rear Window, I think, was probably second on the list, with Vertigo being third. So I've seen it a number of times, and then I bought it on DVD a while back, and so I watched my DVD copy of Rear Window.
Yeah, I watched your DVD copy as well for this podcast episode. I was going to rent it on Amazon Prime, but whenever we were recording this, it's like there's a little pop-up whenever I was trying to rent it, and it was like, it's going to be on Prime for free in like 10 days.
Oh, really?
Like, dang it. But
so by the time this airs, it'll probably be on Prime for free.
Probably. But yeah, or you can borrow your brother's DVD copy of it. The first time I watched it was probably in high school as well. Maybe. Yeah, I think it probably was in high school.
Do you recall your initial impressions of it?
No.
I think I remember liking it. I thought it was like, oh, that's really clever.
Well, I know I had to watch it again in college for a film class, and I remember... Yeah, liking it that time for sure, and then having to go through it a couple times, and it's one of those ones I think it gets better the more you watch it.
Yeah, and I think growing up, like being the age kind of generation that I am, one of like the earliest directors that like a dude tries to like watch is Tarantino. I feel like, and so like I always thought the popular pick of what's the best Tarantino movie is like Pulp Fiction or something. I always liked Reservoir Dogs. And the reason I did was because I always thought it was interesting that most of the movie takes place in one location. And they tell this really complicated story with all these characters that are coming and going, but it's all kind of stays in one location. So you don't really get to jump around like you would in a traditional movie. And I always thought that was kind of a really cool way to tell a story. And I think that's probably for that same reason why I kind of gravitated towards Rear Window.
Now that you say this, I was going to say, wait, where have we seen that before? The Rear Window thing, it's the same thing, all shot in one spot. But then I was thinking of back to when I did see it, and it was definitely in high school for the first time, because I think I went and saw Disturbia in theaters with Shia LaBeouf when I was like a freshman in high school, and then was like, I need to see the movie that it copied.
Gotcha.
And that's Rear Window.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a straight-up remake, because I've never seen Disturbia, or if it's just kind of inspired by, and it's a very similar theme, or...
It's not like a remake. I think it's the exact same thing, though. It's kind of like that new one that's on Netflix with Amy Adams. I think it's a book. Also, The Woman in the Window or whatever. It's the same kind of thing, just different context.
Gotcha. Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah,
and then we'll jump into the movie. He is called the Master of Suspense, and he's often credited with being one of the greatest directors ever. Born in England in 1999 and began directing movies in 1925.
Oh, he's English.
He's very English, yes. He started with silent films, and I thought there was an interesting note that he actually makes the first British talkie in 1929 in a movie called Blackmail. So he makes the English version of the jazz singer. David O. Selznick, the producer we've talked about before, brings him over to America, and his first American movie is called Rebecca in 1940, and it wins the Oscar for Best Picture. He has some good success in the 1940s, and then he kind of falls off a little bit, and then he returns in the 50s with a string of hit after hit. It's kind of like the period that's considered his like golden age. It starts with Rear Window in 1954, then you have his next movies, Vertigo in 1958. Then he has North by Northwest in 1959 and Psycho in 1960. Those four movies back to back are all considered some of the best, and they're all featured on the American Film Institute's list, so we'll be talking about all of them.
I know we're going to be talking about Vertigo. That's the next one, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But who's the male lead in that?
Jimmy Stewart.
It's Jimmy Stewart again? Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Then we'll see one more. I thought it was. Like, we'll see one more Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, we got Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window, Jimmy Stewart in Vertigo, Cary Grant comes back for North by Northwest, and then Psycho is Janet Leigh.
Mm-hmm.
He never wins a Best Director Oscar. Which is a lot of people think is kind of a tragedy, considering how he's sometimes considered to be the greatest film director of all time. Mm-hmm. He does win many Lifetime Achievement Awards, and he dies at the age of 80 in 1980. Hitchcock's style is kind of what he's, you know, he works a lot in genre movies, a lot of suspense, a lot of thrillers. He kind of popularizes a lot of techniques and the genre itself. And so his style's kind of made up all a lot with the shots and the editing of his movies. They're really paced to ramp up suspense and tension, and often shot from the point of view of one of the characters to really put the audience in the place of the character to feel what they feel. And that's one of the first takeaways that I thought when I first was originally watching a lot of these movies, is that I remember just the way that the movies are constructed and the way you get put into them.
Yeah, you get sucked in.
And your heart starts racing the way he builds tension. Mm-hmm. He does it so effectively to manipulate the audience.
Mm-hmm.
He's a master of it. He also famously cameos in most of his own movies, so it's kind of become a bit of a game for people to spot him wherever he shows up in his movies.
Yep.
And then he also really had a popular anthology TV show that he would host, which made his kind of the look, his voice, and his dry, dark sense of humor really popular, which is where that theme song comes from. The A little bit about this movie. It was filmed entirely on the Paramount Studios lot. They built...
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I saw some video about that, and it's like a... It looks like it's in New York apartment, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool set. Really,
right,
really
and it's based on some real, like, New York apartments. They went out scouting and took pictures, and he kind of helped design the look of this place, and they built the whole thing. It's this huge set, and it has a drainage system to because they... There's some sequences that where it's raining, so they needed to be able to properly drain it, and the lighting was set up to appear natural during day and night sequences. Mm. Much of the movie is shot in point of view, and the camera rarely, if ever, leaves the apartment of James Stewart's character.
Yep.
So you're stuck in this room along with the character. You are basically this character.
You've talked about a couple of things that I wanted to chime in on.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with being stuck with this character.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about Hitchcock's style, and like we'll probably be able to point out specifics of it as we go through this movie and all his other movies. But for me, my like primitive grasp on what his style is probably, and this is not like the most educated thing, but it's super attention getting. Like he grabs your focus, and like you only see what you're allowed to see or what he wants you to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like very strategic in that, and what he shows and what he lets you hear and see.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much across the board in all of his movies. But then also he does a lot of really interesting and well-timed camera movements. Like mm-hmm. he's always big on, like, you know, there's the Vertigo effect we'll talk about the next one, but mm-hmm. this one's got a lot of really dynamic shots, and it really gives the camera a lot of character in this stuff.
But right.
I think that's pretty true for all of his other ones I've seen.
Right. And there's a lot of editing techniques that he uses to build up suspense and stuff. He does it in a really interesting way. I remember watching a video of him talking about a sequence in The Birds where there is a gas station that's about to explode, and you kind of... the way it's cutting back and forth, it slowly, the edits, it's like It'll hold for 3 seconds, hold for 5 seconds, then it'll cut to this other shot for five seconds, then it cuts to the other one and hold for 4 seconds, and it cuts to the other one and then it'll hold for 4 seconds, and then 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1. It's almost like a timer that's understood. It's never, that's something that's really subtle, but also at the same time, an effective way to kind of ramp up the tension. And he does a lot of that stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk about with this movie is the sound. There's only two pieces of score at the very beginning, at the very end of the movie. Mm-hmm. The rest of the sound and the music from the movie comes from within the scenes. Mm-hmm. The term for this is diegetic.
Yep.
All the sound comes from the screen. So what we hear is what the characters hear. There's no just like sound score, you know, that just comes out of nowhere. That's mm-hmm. not really what the characters are hearing, but what we as the audience hear. We as the audience only hear and see what the characters. So that's another effective way that puts us in the environment that our main character is in.
It's like a Quiet Place if you saw those movies.
Right. I think that's all I have to talk about before we talk about the movie. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we begin. It's in color again. We have another color movie here. We're getting more and more of these, which I'm liking. We are in an apartment building, or apartment, and the camera kind of moves out. Well,
first, it's got the first bit of the score. It's the one piece of the non-diegetic sound right. of the movie. And
very
then,
jazzy.
Very jazzy, and it's just looking at three windows as the blinds are rolling up. Mm-hmm. And it goes kind of left to right, and then it dives into the courtyard, kind of, and just kind of pans across.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the opening of the blinds there before it goes out into the courtyard is pretty neat, a little shot, and it's pretty, I don't know, important to setting the scene of what you of the view, really.
It's like curtains rising.
Yeah.
I was watching a lot of people talking about this movie and reading a lot about it, and a lot of what people have to say about this is like, as we're looking out the rear window of this apartment building into other people's apartments, the way that their lives are framed, they're framed by the windows. They're almost like individual little screens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like we're, I mean, TV was coming up there at the time. So it's almost like we're channel surfing as we're kind of spying on these people. But it's also, it's like we're watching movies.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of these characters in these apartments has really kind of full, complete storylines that happen independent of this other main murder mystery kind of storyline that's happening.
Yep. And then to aid to the suspense, we only know about them, and we only get like their stories and their personalities and stuff wrapped up in the same viewpoint of Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
As one of the acting or the active members of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Which just, I think it builds to the suspense. But anyways, opens up here in the blinds, and
We meet LB Jeffries, James Stewart, and he's sweating in his apartment. He's sitting in a wheelchair with a cast on his leg that says, "Here lie the bones of LB Jeffries."
And we kind of saw that he's got like photos up in his apartment, and that he's like a wildlife photographer or something. Mm-hmm. Like he goes on expeditions and explorations and takes photos of cool stuff.
Yeah. So he's got all of his work is all around him, including a negative of a woman who, and then the cover of a magazine of a woman who we later learn is his girlfriend Lisa Fremont, played by Grace Kelly.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things I've watched and I remember talking about and learning about this movie. It's like they tell you so much in these first like few minutes of this movie without saying anything.
Right.
It's like you get the window that you're going to be looking out of that is the namesake of the movie. And then you go and you meet all of these individual characters and their windows and their little screens.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pan in and you learn about LB Jeffries and his apartment. You get like the inside where the camera is going to be the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And you get some setup of who these people are. And then you're off, really.
It's really effective storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And efficient.
Mm-hmm. Very efficient.
He's been locked up for weeks, basically, in his apartment, healing from this broken leg. And he's got 1 week left to go, we learn. He's spying on a woman in her underwear that he later calls Miss Torso.
Oh, yeah, Miss Torso.
Right? And as his boss is kind of talking to him on the phone, and he also sees a few other of his neighbors. There's an old woman that he calls Miss Lonely Heart.
It's so sad.
There's a pianist, and there's an older couple that's arguing. which is the Thorwalds, which we will get to know a little bit later. Then I guess it's his nurse comes over. Her name's Stella.
Oh, yeah, she's great, too. They're
Thelma Ritter, who I think is the one in All About Eve who works in...
Oh, really?
Margot Channing's
playing
dressing
the same
room.
Role. Oh, no, in the dressing room. But
the
kind
one
of...
who sees through Eve at the beginning.
There we go. Okay, yeah.
I think that's Thelma Ritter.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a very similar character.
Mm-hmm.
And these are also like similar tropes and stuff that we see in a lot of scary movies. And it's not like the very first time that Hitchcock's using them, because, I mean, we saw some similar things in like Frankenstein and in King Kong. What other scary ones have we watched?
That might be it. Huh. Frankenstein, King Kong, and...
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyways. There's a lot of very, very direct and useful characters and like lines of script. It's always moving it forward, and Thelma Ritter's character is an insurance nurse or whatever for L.B. Jeffries. She's definitely one of those characters. She's always just like foreshadowing everything.
Right. And she's pretty bright. And she comes in to like take his temperature and fix up his apartment and gives him like a massage and kind of just takes care of... She comes in like once a day to do that, do little things for him, basically. Mm-hmm. They're talking about his girlfriend, Lisa Fremont, and he's like, I don't know if I want to marry her, but she kind of expects me to, and she's real high class, he's low class, he wants adventure, he takes, you know, those nature photography things in these far out places, and she's like this socialite model fashionista person. And he's like, I don't know if she wants to marry me, but I don't know if I want to marry her. I'm like, dude, she's gorgeous. What is the matter with you?
So is this lady. She's like, any man of the right mind would marry Lisa, Jeffries. That's her last name.
Lisa Fremont.
Fremont. Yeah. Lisa Fremont in a heartbeat. And she's like, you know, sees him looking out the window and she's like, you're going to get in trouble. I smell trouble. Like, I know, like, I know how to read the future. You're going to look at that and somebody's going to come. Here's the peeping Tom. And like, when you're talking to the cops, like, I know you're going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like whining about Lisa. And she's like, you're an idiot. Anybody, yeah, you, come on, you got to marry her. Don't be stupid. And he's like, oh, well, hot dog. All right.
Hot dog. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, we're with this guy. He's not really the greatest guy. He's a creep. He's watching Miss Torso get undressed and like leering over her. And just like spying on people all the time. That's all he does all day, is just like look out his window with binoculars, try to catch a glimpse of different people. But yet we're forced to kind of be with him.
Yeah. That's why I think, well, we'll talk about that later, but these are themes that are still applicable to modern day, especially after quarantine and the pandemic and everything. Just getting stuck inside, you know. Going a little crazy seems a little bit more relatable, I guess, after that. But yeah, no, he is just pervin.
I think
sad to be broken leg to not be working. I guess he's got some issues here.
Yeah, and the whole thing with his character is that he really values freedom and movement and adventure. And so he feels stuck in more ways than one. He feels stuck because of his broken leg, but he also feels stuck in his relationship. Even though she's really gorgeous, he views her as this thing that is not, is the antithesis or the the opposite of what he really values, adventure and movement and all that stuff. And so he sees it kind of as an extension of his broken leg in a lot of ways. He then sees a newlywed couple moving in and sees them kind of, the newlywed couple like carries his or the
wife across the threshold.
Exactly.
They're like in there looking at the apartment, and then they go back outside so he can like bring her in.
And he kind of smiles, and then he falls asleep in his wheelchair and wakes up to the sight of Lisa Fremont kissing him. And it's kind of slow motion fantasy-like shot where he kind of is blinking his eyes open kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was definitely slow motion. That's the first time we've seen slow-mo.
Yeah, well, we've probably seen it in, like, something, I imagine. We've definitely seen speeded-up effects.
Yeah.
And especially in, like, the Chaplin movies.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any specific slow-mo things right now. But, yeah.
Me neither. But it's cool.
Mm-hmm. She's really determined to make his last week in the cast unforgettable, she says. And she's brought food from a fancy restaurant over, and And
well, that's just it.
Yeah. And while they're talking, it's this great scene. It's very Citizen Kane-like, where he's sitting in the on the left in the foreground. She's on the right in kind of the mid-ground. And then in the background in between them, there's the window, and the sky is red as it's nighttime. And there's a window, the beam and the window pane is kind of in between them, almost dividing them, or dividing the frame, or the shot, rather. And I don't know, it just kind of like there's a distance between them at this stage from his stubbornness.
You don't think either one of us could ever change?
Right now, it doesn't seem so.
But I think it was really well constructed, that shot. It kind of reminded me of Citizen Kane a little bit.
And we've seen, it's Grace Kelly, right?
Mm-hmm.
We saw her in High Noon.
Yeah, dating or being married to another old man.
Yeah.
Gary Cooper in High Noon and old man James Stewart in this one.
Yeah, that was another thing. The insurance nurse, whatever, I forget what her name is, but she at one point's like, you're a healthy young man or something, like says that to Jimmy Stewart, and
his
hair
is completely gray.
Yeah, it's completely gray. Like, he is not a young man.
Yeah, he looks like he's about 50,
and she is definitely a young woman.
And she's like 25 or something.
Yeah, she retires early, if I recall.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, I just thought that was funny.
We see some neighbors in the background, and he sees the old woman across the way setting a table for two and kind of pantomiming having a date by herself over before she
Miss
begins
Lonely
crying.
Heart.
Yeah, he calls her Miss Lonely Heart, and she just is so lonely that she pretends to have a date with somebody. And then he sees Miss Torso, and she's kind of trying. She's got a number of suitors at her apartment, and
she's got like three guys there, and she's hosting or something.
Mm-hmm. And so they're all kind of commenting on that and how. Who's she gonna pick? And Lisa Fremont says she sees a lot of herself in that, in Miss Torso, and kind of just, you know, the world. I think it's that in that comment she's like, the world is how it is. It's a man's world, and you just kind of have to use what you have to try to get by.
Yeah, she says she's doing a woman's like hardest job or something like that, like fending off the wolves or I forget what it is, something like that.
And then we also get another glimpse of the older couple, the Thorwalds, arguing.
Before you go there and staying on that scene in Miss Torso's apartment, what she says is really cool. Grace Kelly says is really cool. She says, she's doing the hardest job, fending off the wolves. And then the way she says it, she's like, he's like, yeah, but look, there she goes. She fell in love or something like that. And then she's like, oh, she doesn't love any of them. And then he's like, how do you know? And she's like, you said that's me, didn't you? Or whatever. And so that's even more referring to her. Like, look, idiot, like I'm in love with you. And then it all comes back at the end of Miss Torso's story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But yeah. Watching that for the second time, I caught that. I was like, oh, that's she's smart.
Like, what has she had to do to get to be successful? You know, and Jimmy Stewart's view is totally wrong, is that he thinks he knows this woman. He's got her all figured out, just like he's got Grace Kelly's character all figured out. But he doesn't really know her either.
Nope.
But he's making all these assumptions.
Just looking at him through a screen.
Yep. And kind of like the audience does in a movie theater watching a movie. The Thorwalds, back to them, they're arguing, and then he makes her some food that she begins eating in bed while he goes and makes a phone call, and she gets up and tries to listen in, which leads to a fight. The man that's playing piano, they see him, and there's Alfred Hitchcock in a cameo, kind of fixing a clock or something in there and listening to him play the piano. He's kind of trying to... the pianist is playing some piece of music that he's been working on, and spoiler, at the end of the movie, he's kind of figured out, he's written the whole thing, you know, it's kind of, that's his journey, is that he's writing this piece, the musical piece, and at the end, it's kind of finished and written, and we get to hear it. And then L.B. Jeffries and Lisa Fremont get into a bit of a fight, as she's kind of, he says she's too perfect and not wanting to be ready for adventure, and this is kind of their back and forth that they have.
Yeah, and then she's like, well, at least the food is nice, and he's like, yeah, it's perfect, just like everything else.
Yep. I'm like, what are you complaining about?
Yeah.
That night, while it's raining, Jeffries is woken up by a scream and some glass shattering. He watches the man Thorwald go in and out of his apartment all night carrying a big suitcase. And the next morning we see the building kind of waking up and active, and Stella's back over massaging L.B. Jeffries as he tells her what he saw last night.
Mm-hmm.
And they look across the way and see Thorwald looking out the window. And there's a dog that's digging in the flower bed, Thorwald's flower bed. And we also see Thorwald wiping down his luggage and putting jewelry in it. So a lot's happened right now, but this is where the story kind of kicks in,
mm-hmm.
with the screaming for help, or I think she screams "don't." Mm-hmm. We hear a woman's voice scream "don't" or "no" or something like that, and then glass shatters, and
he's talking to the nurse, and he's like, she's just, you know, further solidifying her psychic abilities. And she's like, "You slept in the chair last night." And he's like, "Well, how do you know that?" She's like, "You're so rigid and tight like that. I've got to massage you really hard." And he's like, "What were you doing staring out of the window?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I think he might have killed her." And then she's like, just joins on in the hypothesizing about what happened over there. And she's like trying to question him at first. And then by the end of it, she's like, "Oh, yeah, he definitely did it in the bathtub, because that way he could clean up all the blood."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's, again, assuming things, jumping, you know, he's good at that, I guess. And then Lisa comes over, and Jeffries tells Lisa what he saw, and she doesn't believe him, and he's like, "I think he murdered his wife," and then she doesn't believe him until she sees him packing up some things in the bedroom, and then she kind of becomes his partner, and...
Yeah, he's like, "Give me the binoculars. Yeah. Give me my camera lens. Like, my telephoto lens. Let's really get in here."
And she goes and she finds out the apartment number and the name, Mr. and Mrs. Lars Thorwald.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really cool shot of Thorwald just sitting in the dark in his living room smoking a cigar. And you just kind of see
that's after the dog incident.
Oh, yeah. He does it a couple times, I think. But yeah, that's the most, that incident you're talking about is the most awesome thing. But yeah, so Lisa's kind of joined him in his adventure. Oh, they're going on an adventure that she would never go on. Yep. Interesting.
Yep, now she's trying to prove him wrong.
Yeah. Or maybe this is just kind of who she is, and he kind of refused to see it.
Yeah, just show him what she really is.
Mm-hmm. The next day, Stella is there, and they're watching the Thorwald apartment together. Jeffries, L.B. Jeffries and Stella, and they see... two men come to pick up the big trunk he had packed the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, "I wonder if that's her body or her things in there or something."
Yeah, that's what she's like, "He did it in the tub."
Yeah. His police detective friend comes over, but Jeffrey says doesn't have much. But he's like, I'll look into it a little bit. Police detective friend finds out that Thorwald put his wife on a train to go to the country. Jeffries doesn't believe it and wants him to search the apartment.
He's a very... logical line of questioning that he does for the cop. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Oh, he put his wife on the train and whatever." And he's like, "Yeah, says him." And then he's like, "Was there any witnesses? Did you see the wife?"
Right.
And he's like, "Ah, it's okay. You're crazy, LB."
Well, he's really challenging. And throughout there's a couple of scenes with the police detective friend and LB Jeffries where Jeffries is challenging him on these things and the police detective's kind of shutting him down.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the scene will end with the police detective walking out and like, "Oh yeah, pulling like a Columbo and be like, "One more thing."
Mm-hmm.
And saying something that's really damning that sounds like Jeffries is, maybe he's wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's a really important thing, is that we're with Jeffries and we're like, yeah, this guy obviously killed his wife. But then this guy comes in and says something that would seem to exonerate this guy multiple times. And we're like, oh, wait, is Jeffries crazy? Is he making this all in his head? And he's just making up this because he's bored.
And we're like, we're with him the whole time. Maybe he's crazy. Maybe we're crazy.
Right.
What are we seeing?
So the movie does a really good job of making it actually a good question of, did he really kill his wife? Or is this fake? And like all this tension, is this guy a bad guy or what's going on here? Is Jeffries right? Is he wrong? Are we right? Are we wrong? I think it does a good job about that.
Mm-hmm.
We also see the dog digging around in the flower bed again. The next night, Jeffries is watching the neighbors, and eventually he sees Thorwald return, and it looks like he's packing to head out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls his detective's friend and gets his wife and leaves a message with him. And Thorwald goes through his wife's jewelry, and Lisa, being the detective now, brings a woman's perspective about jewelry. And she's like, ah, a woman would never go put her jewelry in underwear drawer or whatever it is, and like all these things. And Jeffries has her sit on his lap, and I think this is one of the scenes where he's most clearly attracted to her in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
She reveals that she's going to stay the weekend with him. Very scandalous. They're not married.
No.
And his landlord wouldn't approve of that.
Oh,
and
man.
All of these things.
Whenever you're talking about the two of them together, you missed one of the best Jimmy Stewart lines.
What is that?
And one of the most absurd Jimmy Stewart things. They're talking during the first dinner, I think, or the first night she's... Not the first night she's there. But they're arguing, and then he's like... Well, if you just shut up for a little bit, like maybe I could explain it to you. And then she just keeps on like going and doesn't let him get in. He's like, would you shut up? Or shut up already or something. And his little voice is so absurd. So rude. But
speaking of, there's this stupid Saturday Night Live sketch that I saw. It's about the filming of Rear Window.
Oh, no.
And it's Jason Sudeikis is Jimmy Stewart. And he talks like that. And Bobby Moynihan is Alfred Hitchcock. And then whoever the host was, I think it was the actress, January Jones, she's playing Grace Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is like, she's like this beautiful princess, perfect person, mm-hmm. you know, but she keeps farting and ruining the scenes. But he's just like, but Jason Sudeikis and Jimmy Stewart voice just always going like, whoa, Grace, you know, like open a window kind of stuff. It's so dumb and so childish. But it was funny just to hear Jason Sudeikis do the Jimmy Stewart voice.
All right, I'm going to have to check that out later.
Yeah. She's staying the weekend with him. Doyle comes over, and I think that's the police detective friend. They see Thorwald cleaning some knives and like a saw. And mm-hmm. he's like, I don't believe this murder story. But then we hear some screaming. Because the dog's been found dead, and the neck is broken.
Yep.
And so Jeffries thinks Thorwald did it because the dog was digging up the flower bed.
I forget who the dog owner is. I don't know which window that is.
It's like...
Is it the couple that sleeps on the balcony or no?
I think so.
Okay.
It's so hot or something.
Rain. Yeah.
They have like a little mattress on their little fire escape.
But they have this little rope and pulley system with a basket on it that they like let their dog down into the courtyard to, you know, pee and everything. And then they like just let the basket there and then, you know, wheel him back up whenever he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then he's been digging at the rose garden and then they're like put the basket out for him to come back up and he doesn't come back up and they mm-hmm. start yelling and crying like, who killed my dog? It's like, any of you like. Say something. I know you're all out there watching. Like, please, like, won't somebody say something?
And we see all of the neighbors just watching mm-hmm. silently. And then we look into Thorwald's apartment. And this is what you're talking about before.
Yeah, Grace Kelly says something like, it's so terrible. Who would do such a thing? And then Jimmy's like, well, oh, look, there's one person who didn't come to the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shows the window and it's blacked out. And then you see, like, a cigar being lit. It's just like, embers and everything, and it's completely black, and they're like, oh, he did it. Why would he kill the dog? That's messed up.
Mm-hmm. Like maybe because he was digging around in there. He didn't want him to see something. So
maybe he was digging around, and she was buried right there in the flower garden, and then Stella's like, no, you can't bury a whole person right there. I tell you, she's in all the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, gross. He's like, what? There's nothing pretty about murders. She's chopped up and all her pieces are spread. And you're like, jeez.
Then Jeffries has Lisa deliver a note that he wrote to Thorwald to try and see what his reaction would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they go and they deliver it and then they watch him. They watch his reaction. And during this time, and he kind of gets wide-eyed a little bit. And Stella and Lisa are determined to dig up the flower bed to find out what could be buried there. Mm-hmm. And so Jeffries follows up this letter by calling over to Thorwald's apartment.
Go on, pick it up, Thorwald. Go on, you're curious. Come on, you wonder if it's your girlfriend calling, the one you killed for. Go on, pick it up.
Hello?
Did you get my note? Well, did you get it, Thorwald?
Who are you?
I'll give you a chance to find out. Meet me in the bar at the Albert Hotel. Do it right away.
Why should I?
Little business meeting. To settle the estate of your late wife.
And while he leaves, Stella and Lisa head outside and they go into the flower bed and they start digging up into the flower bed. And this whole thing is like from Jeffrey's perspective. We're watching. They kind of follow them from above mm-hmm. as they go. And they don't find anything in the flower bed. So Lisa, she's still determined. She goes up into Thorwald's apartment.
Yeah, and this is where the suspense really kicks in because you're, you know... I mean, you feel for LB, and it's like he's just sitting there watching his friend, or the woman he loves, go into somebody else's apartment, a known mm-hmm. killer's apartment, and he can't do anything. It makes right. you feel like you're helpless like that in the audience. You're like, oh, God, oh, God.
Yeah. And it's the time is ticking, too. Like, Thorwald could come back any minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's up in the apartment. And meanwhile, Stella has come back into Jeffrey's apartment, and they see Miss Lonelyheart appears to be about to swallow a bunch of pills to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I know what those pills are. Give me those binoculars. And she like saves this woman's life.
Yeah. And so they're about to call the police to get Miss Lonelyheart, but she stops when she hears the pianist start playing some music. And Thorwald, meanwhile, he's starting to return and they see him. So they're trying to get Lisa out of there. But she doesn't get out quick enough, and he returns home and catches her in his apartment. He starts like smacking her around mm-hmm. and grabbing her, but as they were doing that, Stella and Jeffries had called the police, and the police arrive just in time, and they're in Thorwald's apartment. They begin interviewing Lisa and Thorwald, and
they arrest Lisa,
but before they do that...
She was breaking and entering. She was in this man's apartment.
But before they do that, while she's talking to the police, she's got her back to the window.
Mm-hmm.
And they zoom in because she's pointing at her hand and she has...
The wedding ring.
Mrs. Thorwald's wedding ring on her finger.
Look, the wedding ring.
If she's going out just to the country, why would she leave her wedding ring behind?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're convinced that Thorwald's killed mm-hmm. his wife now. So they take Lisa away. But Thorwald sees her pointing at the ring in this moment, and then he kind of follows it up through the window and just looks straight into the camera.
Turn out the light, he's seen us.
And catches Jeffries and Stella staring. And so he's like, uh-oh, they've been caught. And Jeffrey, in a really terrible decision, I think, sends Stella to go bail out Lisa.
Yeah, just
and leaving him alone.
Yeah.
And then he calls his detective friend to tell him about everything, but he doesn't get an answer.
He gets a call back,
so he thinks it's his detective friend, and he starts immediately talking about Thorwald, and then he stops because he realizes it's Thorwald that's called him.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Tom. I think Thorwald's left. I don't. Hello.
He said enough to confirm Thorwald's suspicions about him. So great. Now Thorwald's going to be coming over to kill him.
Mm-hmm. And he comes to the door. I forget how he just opens the door. I guess it's unlocked.
Yeah. So yeah, Jeffries prepares a flashbulb and he kind of waits facing the door as the light goes out in the hallway. And you hear him steps in silence walking towards the doorway, and the door opens and there's Thorwald walking in, and he closes the door behind him. And then, boom, he blinds him with a flashbulb. And there's a weird little red lighting effect after the flashbulb goes off. And I guess it's to simulate Thorwald's vision kind of being blurred or something. And he just kind of is flashing flashbulb after flashbulb as Thorwald is walking closer towards him.
Yeah, and there it's the big confrontation. And he's, you know, like, what do you want? And, you know, he's trying to talk to him, but he's just not really saying anything, and he's just flashing him as he gets closer, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like strobing him, getting closer and closer, about to
mm-hmm.
you know, attack Jeffries. But it's not the first time we've had lighting effects to talk about in this movie. There's all sorts of things with it being in the shadow mm-hmm. and all of the
right,
you know, the light and dark, and like there's a bunch of stuff going on here mm-hmm. with the lighting and everything. But Yeah, no, this is a very, very suspenseful part here. He's gonna die.
Yeah, and he just gets closer and closer, and then Jeffrey sees Lisa and his police detective friend arriving, but they're going to Thorwald's apartment across the way. So they're there, but they're too far away. And he screams
Lisa!
As Thorwald begins choking him. And they hear him and they begin running over, but Thorwald is choking Jeffries, and then he picks him up and he throws him and he's hanging Jeffries out the window. And then the cops are racing over, and they get in and they enter and they pull Thorwald off of Jeffries, and then Jeffries falls out the window.
Sorry, Jeff, I got here as fast as I could.
Mr. Jeffries, don't let anybody touch me. Get my medical bag from upstairs.
Oh, Lisa, sweetie, if anything had happened to you.
Oh, shut up, I'm all
right. First time he's leaving his apartment in the whole movie, and really the first time the camera is leaving the apartment the whole movie. But his fall kind of is broken by landing on some cops.
You got enough for a search warrant now?
And Thorwald then confesses to the cops. So that's the kind of climax of the film, this big suspenseful moment. And then there's just one little last scene here. Jeffries is back. He's got two broken legs.
Yeah, the cops broke his fall, but he broke his leg.
Yeah. And he's scanning the building. Miss Lonely Heart is with the musician, that his beautiful music is finished, and the beautiful music saved her life. She stopped her suicide attempt because of the music. Miss Torso hears a knock at the door, and she opens it, and there's a soldier, very short soldier, and she's her love of her life.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a mismatch maybe on the surface, but they're in love.
Kind of like Grace Kelly and Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm. The newlyweds are out of their honeymoon phase, and they're arguing or something. One couple has a new puppy, as Jeffries is asleep in his wheelchair with two legs in a cast, Lisa is reading an adventure magazine next to him.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she notices he's asleep, she switches to a fashion magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's changed, but she's still the same at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's the end of Rear Window.
Yay. Great movie.
It's fantastic. I just love how they kind of wrap up everybody's storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It's everyone has a complete little thing, a little moment. So it comes out, it gets good reviews, and does well at the box office. It gets nominated for 4 Academy Awards. It doesn't win any of them, though. Alfred Hitchcock gets nominated for Best Director. It gets a nomination for Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, and Best Sound. American Film Institute ranks it number 42 and number 48 greatest movie of all time. The number 14 most thrilling movie of all time. And the number 3 best mystery of all time. It gets remade into a TV movie, I think starring Christopher Reeve in the 90s. Disturbia, which you already mentioned. And of course, there's a bunch of other movies that it's inspired, like you said, The Woman in the Window and all kinds of things. Inspirational movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not inspirational, but it has a big influence. Influential, that's the word I'm looking for. And it's our first Hitchcock movie, so I was really excited to... One of the more entertaining movies I think we've watched on the list so far.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got, except for talking about what makes it great.
Yeah, I forgot some other things, but I'll just wrap it into what makes it great.
Sure.
I feel like we didn't talk about the cinematography at all, but...
The camera movements, especially that first one where it goes out the window.
Yeah.
And it sets the tone in the stage.
And then at the end of it, you were just saying that the camera never left the window. Jimmy Stewart never left the window, but the camera flies out and does all these cool zooms in between Grace Kelly and Jimmy Stewart looking at the other windows, and the pans that it has going across all of the windows. It's incredible.
But if it flies out, it only flies out just outside of his window.
Yes.
It's like it's hanging outside of his window.
But you feel like you're being thrown out of the window.
Yes,
but
yes.
The camera physically probably is hanging out the window, but you know,
yeah, like you're sticking your head out the window.
Yes but you're not that's like sometimes in this movie I don't feel like I'm entirely stuck in this room like Jimmy Stewart is.
Mm-hmm.
But all the lighting, whenever it's like the shadow of his windowsill, and then whenever he's in the light he can be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he backs up and tries to get out of the light so he can't be seen. All that stuff is really cool.
The really striking image of the cigar.
Yes, that's a really, really good shot. It's a really enjoyable film, and it builds so much suspense. Mm-hmm. What it says, like, it's kind of like a social commentary of the time too. I think that aspect of it's really neat, and I think that's why it's been so remade and so influential, because it's still applicable to today. I really, really enjoy that. And in Disturbia, I think it's like, less you get the periphery of the other neighbor's stories, and it's more focused in.
Mm-hmm.
In Woman in the Window, there's a lot more of the untrustworthy narrator kind of thing that they kind of play to. But all of them are really, really cool aspects to making this like a really classic, scary movie trope. And a classic scary movie. And that's what Hitchcock does. And I'm really glad that we got to watch this one and talk about this one. And Jimmy Stewart is just always amazing. I love Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Definitely still my favorite.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best actors still that we've encountered on our list. For me, the set, I love the set. It's so expansive and yet small and compact. There's so much going on. And the way that the windows are designed to be like screens that we're just getting glimpses of people's lives. And yeah, this commentary of like what it has to say about the movie going audience, this kind of voyeuristic appeal that we have to spy on people, basically, is really cool. The fact that the movie is largely from L.B. Jeffrey's point of view, and the camera kind of follows his point of view, whether it's through binoculars or his camera or sticking his head out his window or... you know, all these different things. The suspense, the way they build up the moments of suspense and tension, the sound that it all kind of comes from within the movie is really cool and something I don't think we've seen up to this point. It's spectacle and it's realistic at the same time. I think it's over the top in some things, but it's also feels grounded and real at the same time. So I think there's a kind of cool dichotomy there. And then it's just fun and innovative in the way that it's shot and edited and the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun movie, but I was thinking about like how a lot of innovations and things in movies come from like genre movies, you know, whether they're suspense or horror or sci-fi kind of things. There's a lot of interesting, unique things that are done in these types of movies. And it's like, they're often, or Westerns and things, they're oftentimes thought of as like low class, but when they're done with this kind of innovation, it really elevates the whole craft. And I like when you have a genre kind of like the suspense genre that some people kind of look down on, but it's really, when you have a master like Hitchcock behind the helm, it elevates the whole thing. And so it's fun and innovative, and I really like this movie quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's it for Rear Window this time. Next time, we're going to be talking about a movie from 1955 called Rebel Without a Cause.
Interesting.
Starring James Dean.
Oh, he did.
He is dead. I've never seen this movie. It's ranked number 59 on the original list, and it's not ranked on the 10th anniversary list, but I've never seen it, so I'm interested to see. I've never seen any James Dean movies, actually, so I'm interested to watch that one.
Doesn't have very many.
Yeah, I think he's got two on the list, though.
Oh, wow.
I think he made four movies or something. Two of them are on the list.
Huh.
So, that'll be next time. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. It really helps us be able to spread the podcast around and get more people listening, and share it with your friends and family if you're enjoying it. But for this time, my name is Andy Fernandez.
My name is Michael Fernandez. Thank you guys for joining us on What Makes It Great.